Welcome to PPM Simplifies. This is a weekly podcast that will help you have a better understanding on environmental regulations and how they relate to your industry. In each episode, we'll talk with experts across various industries who will share their insights with you. This is PPM Simplifies.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to PPM Simplifies. My name is Zane Hood, and I'll be your host today. We're having a little extra fun today. Normally, Todd Perry hosts this, and Todd wrote an original content article a few weeks back on the evolution of gasoline and octane additives from lead to ethanol. And Todd and I, we had a really good discussion on this, and I had suggested, hey, you might want to do a podcast on that. And so I get to host it today, and it's going to be a little different. Todd will be our guest speaker. And so we've got a few questions here we're going to roll through and just have this discussion. Welcome, Todd.
Hey, Zane. Good morning, buddy. I tell you what, it's a little odd being the guest, but it's always fun. So thanks for letting me have an opportunity to sit on the other side of the microphone, so to speak.
Yeah, looks good. Let's hop right in. So, you and I both have been in the petroleum industry doing consulting work for, you know, over 30 years. And we've seen just a big change, a cycle of things from the Energy Act and all the other initiatives that have changed the way fuel is made up, a lot of it in the spirit of either trying to use renewables or clean the air or make the water cleaner. So let's just hop in on some of these questions and look at them. First of all, tell us a little bit, Todd, about the role of gasoline in the early days of oil refining, and how did it transition from waste to a valuable fuel for automobiles?
Yeah, so I'm a history buff. I love to study history because whenever we can understand where things came from, it just kind of helps us understand the path that we're heading on. And as you pointed out, as oil, petroleum was discovered in the late 19th century, 1859, the first oil well in Pennsylvania, Edwin Drake, put that in, and we began to discover this great product, which gave us energy and fuel. Typically, kerosene was what we were after, and the light ends, and that was used for lamps and lighting. The light ends were just discarded. There were no practical use for that. It was just kind of a waste product. And that went along really until the late 1800s, 1890s, as we started building the first automobiles. We said, hey, gasoline can power these fuels. And it revolutionized to where we could use everything we were discovering in the column. And by 1920s, you know, we began to mass produce gasoline. It's kind of funny. Henry Ford, before he, you know, got to gasoline, he first began to pursue ethanol as a fuel back in the, you know, turn of the century to power his gasoline. So it's kind of wild, but, as we, you know, found the use for that lighter end, an automobile just took off mass transportation. That's when gasoline really came into it. But like everything, as you begin to use it and begins to the demand increases, you get some challenges.
I just remember being like a kid. I had my first car was a little 69 Camaro. And I remember going to the gas station and I would fill up and there was regular leaded fuel. And now everything we see is unleaded. Tell us a little bit about the change there from regular leaded to unleaded, which is the only thing that's available now.
That's right. And so as we began to use fuel in gasoline, we began to discover that anytime you've had a car, maybe you had a lesser grade of gasoline, you'll hear your engine begin to knock. And certainly the muscle car you had, the 1969 Camaro, you'd be careful.
Missed that car, by the way.
That's a good one. You know, they need the right octane so you don't have engine knock. That's what the property does. It's more efficient, in the combustible engine. But as demand increased in the 1920s, General Motors discovered tetraethyl lead. And you could add that to gasoline that would boost the octane, and that would quiet the engine knock. And that was the standard for a long time. Mm-hmm. As we evolved, and of course, lead had lots of uses, and it, you know, certainly made life better. However, we learned that lead exposure creates lead poisoning and other serious health risks. And, you know, leaded paint, leaded additives and gasoline, using a lot of other areas, we began to see some, you know, IQ and learning behavioral problems, things like that. So from lead exposure, so we began to say, well, wait a second, we need to find something that we can do to address that. And I believe the Clean Air Act of 1970, that began the process of taking lead fuel out of our fuel supply.
So when they took it out, they probably still had that problem of knocking. What did they do to, I mean, where did they go with it from there?
Yeah. And this really hits us because you can remember as young adults, teenagers, we had leaded fuel and then that was phased out. And what was replaced was a chemical called MTBE, methyl tetrabutyl ether. And so MTBE, it had the properties, did the same thing. And that was awesome, except what we learned was MTBE, if there was a gasoline underground storage tank release, MTBE was very soluble in water and would actually spread further and create more contaminant problems and risk to human health and the environment. So, you know, it turned out the solution that we had, which, you know, took care of getting lead out of the fuel supply, but MTBE created a whole nother set of environmental issues because it would contaminate groundwater supplies much more readily. And
it's amazing all the contaminated sites that we've worked at and closed out over the years, and MTBE just travels so much further and it's so much more soluble in water. We've been chasing that stuff for years. So it's really crazy. Now, how about just the health risks in general as they phased out MTBE, which we don't see as much of it anymore, still do some. But what about the health risks with the whole benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, xylene, or BTEX, as we often call it? How has EPA regulated those compounds in gasoline? Because those aren't exactly friendly either, you know. So.
Well, that's right. And it's you know, gasoline is a very complex formula. And as that evolved, as automobiles became more and more commonplace, BTEX, benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, xylene, was a helper to lead and to MTBE and to other components. Of course, we'll get to what's in fuel now to help, you know, drive up octane, you know, get the engines to perform efficiently. However, benzene is a known carcinogenic, and, you know, toluene, ethylbenzene, xylene are, you know, on the list too, is suspect risk to human health and the environment. They're volatile chemicals. And they also, you know, if you have a gasoline release or exposure to gasoline, you know, these products can create a human health risk to you. And BTEX, as we look at gasoline, look at, you know, in our window, Zane, that's our marker chemical. We're looking for gasoline. We're looking for BTEX. And as we find BTEX in the subsurface from a gasoline release, that's the target chemical we look at to remediate, because if the BTEX chain is gone, we know that gasoline is also gone from the soil or the groundwater, the media that we're addressing, and therefore, you know, human health and environment is safe. But, you know, BTEX, we talk about lead coming out, MTBE coming out. BTEX has been that common, you know, additive, and it's still used today.
What about, I remember also in that 69 Camaro, just going to fill up, and I remember hearing the term gasohol. And there was talk about they would use alcohol to run our cars. And I remember how bizarre that sounded. Couldn't believe it. But, you know, since then they created the Energy Act and they formed this, renewable fuels initiative. And now every time we go to the gas pump and we fill up, generally speaking, unless we make a special purchase, there is 10% ethanol in most of the fuel that we buy at a gas station. So why is that? What was the purpose in that? What was this alleged purpose, and what are some of the issues that came out of that environmentally or even performance of the UST systems related to ethanol?
And that's a fantastic question. It gets us to where we are today, but I'm going to back up just a hair and talk about the driver for that. You know, you referenced gasohol. In the 1970s, you had the fuel embargoes. You had all those challenges with, you know, gasoline prices, fuel prices skyrocketing. You could only fill up on certain days. You had constrained supplies. And because of that, Congress, the leaders of our nation, the producers, they said, we've got to find other solutions so we don't find ourselves in this position because we can't afford, you know, $10 a gallon gasoline. And I'm making an extreme example, but, you know, so in the 70s, we had that. And other nations, for instance, Brazil is an ethanol nation. They run, you know, most of their fuels are all ethanol. And ethanol is renewable. It's a plant-based corn is where it comes out of. And what we found was ethanol can be used to help the octane to where you don't have the knocking engine and the gasoline can perform. So we began to bring ethanol in, as you said, through the Energy Act. And typically it's up to 10% in your fuel supply. It could be 3%, could be 8%, but no more than 10%. If it's more than 10%, then it's typically marked as an E15 or E85. That's percentage of ethanol that's in there. But you know, ethanol, it's very efficient in boosting octane. One of the challenges with ethanol, and of course everything has, you know, its great positives and its, you know, challenges. Ethanol is very soluble with water. Ethanol actually, you know, bring water if it encounters water, it would go into solution very quickly and create, you know, a biofouling, create kind of gooks and grow, you know, different things that are not good for your underground storage tank systems or your vehicles. One thing you hear about is folks with older outboard motors have to go out and seek non-ethanol gasoline because the ethanol, I mean, you got a boat, you got water all around you, and it quickly fouls up the motor and doesn't perform with those products.
That's right. I mean, lawn equipment, I never put ethanol fuel in my lawn equipment. It just makes a huge difference, even if it says it will take it.
And those simple combustion engines, they were just, you know, built without really thinking about that. But, you know, another positive on ethanol, and that's a challenge with ethanol, is that the emissions, you know, are not quite as significant as certainly, you know, the lead emissions or the MTB emissions. So, you know, that's a positive, but because it's so soluble with water, you know, older things, combustible, you know, lawn equipment, motors, underground storage tank equipment, they can actually have adverse reactions with it. You know, ethanol is a very corrosive, quite frankly, to things that's like right. rubber and aluminum. And, you know, that's a ricochet that we've got to work through and think about it.
That's right. And the cost to refine ethanol as well, Todd, isn't it actually a lot higher than it is to refine gasoline?
It is. And that's, you know, that's where you really start to dig into some of the challenges, because ethanol is highly subsidized to be competitive, because people say, well, you know, E85, I can buy it $1.99 a gallon, to where gasoline is $2.50 a gallon. I can say 50 cents a gallon. Well, the challenge is, first of all, your miles per gallon diminish with an E85 product.
It's fascinating to me. I mean, that's that whole topic of ethanol and subsidies and the RIN and all that is a whole nother podcast, isn't it, Todd?
It is. We will do that.
That's a little teaser.
There we go. And, you know, as we look at it, and as we sit today, there's certainly a big push in heavily subsidized the electric vehicle. And I don't know if electric vehicles make up, you know, I don't even know it's a full percent or two of our fleet now. It's certainly being subsidized and growing. Hydrogen, you know, a lot of folks think that's where the future goes. We see nations like Brazil that are fully ethanol. Does ethanol kind of win the day? It's going to be fun to watch as these things develop. And, you know, it always flashes back to me, though, Henry Ford, the first Model T's, I said earlier, but he wanted to use ethanol as his primary fuel supply for those Model T's. And that's kind of amazing. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Circle right back around. Well, it's been a pleasure, Todd. Been a pleasure. It's been a lot of fun to discuss this, and maybe we can continue this discussion on some related topics in the future. But it's been great hosting you, and a lot of fun.
It's been great, and it's always fun to talk about that. And, you know, so much of what we do, because we do, you know, a big part of our business is working with underground storage tank owners, working with the terminals, working with refiners. It's fun to just study and talk about this particular piece, which is the formula of gasoline and you know, octanes and different additives. So thanks for allowing me to do it.
Absolutely. It's been great, Todd.
All right. And hey, Zane, one last thing. If anybody wants to reach out and talk about the topic a little more, the fastest way to find us is go to our webpage, ppmco.com. Go to the About Us tab. Zane's on there. I'm on there. Email us. We'd love to visit with you more about it. Zane, thank you for hosting, and I'll let you shut us out.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Hope everybody has a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for finding our podcast. For more information, be sure to visit our website at ppmco.com. To stay updated on new episodes, feel free to subscribe to PPM Simplifies on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this is PPM Simplifies.